Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
And that is going to do it. The Celtics hang on!
And they did, to beat the Cleveland Cavaliers last night, 117-113. And then there's the Bruins, who continue to set kind of a ridiculous number of records as they raise expectations for playoffs from them. So there's a lot to talk about, and we want to break it all down with a sports roundup now. Joining us on the line, Jonathan Marshall, WMUR sports reporter. Welcome back, John.
How's it going, guys?
Doing well, and that means you know that here in Studio 2, WBUR's Chris Siderick is with us.
Hey, let's
Chris.
Do it.
All right. So listen, Jonathan, I want to start with the Celtics. They get the win last night despite, okay, so, but they're up at 20 by 21 at some point, and then they win by like four. So major headlines for you from the game last night.
Look, Cleveland's a good team. They're one of the top teams in the Eastern Conference, right? This is a possible playoff opponent, depending on how seeding works out. And so you have a team with Donovan Mitchell, Darius Garland, a talented big man duo, and Evan Mobley and Jared Allen. So that's a tough opponent. So kudos for the Celtics for bouncing back from that Knicks game, and Jason Tatum specifically from bouncing back from that Knicks game and having a huge game last night. Runs happen in the NBA. It's a win, and you got to appreciate a win against a quality opponent in the Eastern Conference. So to me right now, they just got to keep winning games, because at this moment, Milwaukee's the top seed in the East now. It's no longer the Celtics. So the Celtics are going to have to keep winning games if they want to have home court advantage, which is going to be huge in the playoffs. So you got to win. You got to win these games no matter what.
So wait, I'm going to go to Chris in a second, but I think I didn't realize this. Was the Knicks loss, was that the difference between the Celtics being at the top and going in with, you know, having favored home court advantage opportunity? Was that the Knicks loss that did that?
Pretty much, yep.
All right. Then,
you know, Milwaukee's been on fire lately.
Milwaukee has won a crazy amount of games lately as well. So you can't afford, every game matters. Every game matters. Pretty much a half game difference between Milwaukee and Boston. So this is a crucial stretch.
I feel like cue the Darth Vader music there with Milwaukee. Now I'm going to be like, dun, 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 dun. So Chris Siderick, I'll turn to you, because the other thing that Jonathan Marshall mentioned there was Jason Tatum, who has been in a little bit of a slump, big in the All-Star game, right? But a bit of a slump since then. What did you see from him last night? Anything to ease worries?
Oh, yeah, it was a huge game from him. And he started out a little slow, but then really kind of took it over starting in the second quarter. He had 15 points in the second quarter and ended up with 41 for the game. He kind of did back and forth with Donovan Mitchell for the Cleveland Cavaliers and you know, did enough to put his team over the top. He did definitely start pretty slow out of the All-Star break, and even kind of talked about that he had kind of put so much on that weekend, and clearly showed, you know, with his All-Star game performance. That game has become so important to a lot of these players in terms of raising their overall brand and reputation around the league with other players in the league. But he talked about last night specifically how he kind of overcame that slump and kind of got back into the rhythm, and I want to play a little bit of that sound here.
Really got to the free throw line tonight. And I just got some easy ones early, right? You know, easy ones early, layup in transition, getting downhill, finishing at the basket, just kind of opens things up. It wasn't like I was discouraged or worried, you know, because I hadn't shot the ball that great out the break. Just came out here with the mindset trying to find a way to win.
So I thought that was striking for a couple of reasons. One, he admits he you know, hasn't shot well since the All-Star break. Says he wasn't worried, but you have to think at some point it's creeping into the back of his mind, right? That he's got to kind of overcome that hump. Second, there's a key thing to kind of watch for when he does start slow. He talks about those easy baskets, right? So in transition, when, you know, the Celtics make a steal or grab a rebound and kind of run down the floor before the other team can set up their defense, getting those baskets right close to the hoop where you don't have to, you know, if you're struggling shooting from three from long distance, you get those nice easy hoops, you get to the free throw line, you get those shots at your pace. It really helps you kind of settle into your game, and I thought he really did that last night in the show.
Okay, so with all of that sort of hanging in our heads, Jonathan Marshall, explain for people who may not know how a playoff system works, this home court advantage thing, how we get it and how important it might be to a Boston Celtics team.
Well, it's important for any team, right? If you want to compete, that means having that home court advantage in the playoffs where there's intensity, just having that crowd. There's a reason why these teams vie for that, right? Just having that extra extra home court support in the crowd when things get a little intense, and sleeping in your own beds more often than not, right? During the playoffs when you're traveling, right? And so just avoiding extra travel, having to avoid going into hostile territory as much as possible. And so if Boston finishes in second in the Eastern Conference, they can still have home court advantage throughout the playoffs until the Eastern Conference Finals if they were to play Milwaukee. But that's why it's key to finish in that top spot, so you can just guarantee yourself home court throughout the playoffs, regardless of who you're playing. So it's very crucial.
I would say, though, it's more important to some teams than others. And I think this is a core that's shown that they can win big games on the road. They won a game 7 in Milwaukee last year on their playoff run. So I don't think it's a make or break thing for them. I think they actually kind of relish being the villains on the road sometimes and playing in that environment. So it's more important for some teams than others. Obviously, if you have your druthers, you'd like to play home for a crucial game 7 if you can.
All right, exactly. So I want to move to the Boston Bruins now. And Chris, I'll stay with you for just a second, just because, you know, several years ago now, when I first started on the show, you were like, you were going to turn me into a Bruins fan. And I was like, whatever. But I'm loving them. So I want to talk a little bit about pulling off the parquet, getting to the ice underneath, and the TD Garden. They have won 8 in a row. What are your headlines for the Bruins?
Well, it's right funny now? You mentioned that, because this team has kind of morphed into a team that I think actually would suit your rooting interests.
It does.
They used to be kind of the hulking bruisers, right, that would out-hustle you and out-hit you in the corners and all of that. They've become this highly skilled, finely tuned scoring machine, right, where they're just doing their – you got these incredible highlight goals coming. But my ultimate highlight, hands down, is Linus Ullmark, their goalie, who has just been – I mean, head and shoulders above every other goalie in the league. And I know there was a moment recently that caught your attention. I want to play that here.
Connor Garland off Besser's stick. Ullmark is going to try it, and he scores! Linus Ullmark, the odds-on Vezina Trophy winner, scores an empty net goal to seal this win.
So, somebody resuscitate Jack Edwards. clearly a bit of a Bruins fan. No, but Linus Ullmark scores a goal. First time a Bruins goalie's ever scored a goal. But he also set a record on Tuesday that I think is even more impressive. 54 saves in their win over the Calgary Flames. Jeez. That's the most saves by a Bruins goalie ever.
So hold on. Explain what that means, though, for people who don't watch hockey.
It means that for 54 out of the 57 times the puck came at him, he knocked it away.
Nice.
Right? So, I mean, it's just an unbelievable performance. And the Bruins got outshot 57-20 in that game and ended up winning anyway in overtime. So that tells you that this team is making the most out of their opportunity and that this goalie is really helping them reach their ceiling. But I will say, the record that Ullmark broke with those 54 saves, Tim Thomas, 52 saves back in 2011. I don't know if you remember 2011.
Tell us.
Some big things were happening. And in fact, that was the Bruins Cup season, right?
Yeah.
And I will
Stanley
add,
Cup winners.
Especially for Jonathan, that those 52 saves came against Philadelphia.
Jonathan, jump in.
Wow. No comment, Chris. No comment at all.
All right. So, Jonathan, yeah, I was going to say for listeners, you might like the Philly team. So, we're just going to put that out there. And now, jump in on these Bruins and on hockey this year.
Hey, Chris, I could mention the football season, but we're not going to do that. You know, we're not even going to talk about
it. Yeah, you're not going to do that because it didn't end well for you either.
It's okay. Now, as far as the Bruins, I mean, we've talked about this all season. I mean, they've proven the dominance. As far as, I mean, you look at the standings, it's the Bruins and then everybody else to me. Like, you know, when you look at what the Celtics are doing, they're in a tight race for their top spot. I think the Bruins have solidified themselves as the top team, not only in the East, but just the entire league. And they're doing it consistently, right? Like, you look at what they've done. They're producing at a high rate, you know, as far as offensively. And they're doing it. They've been able to sustain it. And that's a team that you can trust when it comes to playoff time, because they really haven't had too many lows this season. They've reeled off 5 straight wins, 6 straight wins throughout the year. And so I think that proves that's a team that's consistent in what they do.
So
and that's trustworthy in the playoffs.
I hear you, Jonathan Marshall. And yet, I worry about the grind. You know, Dan Shaughnessy of the Boston Globe says this week what happened in 1971 should be a cautionary tale for these Bruins. You and I have talked on air before, Jonathan, about the injuries and the wear and tear. Yes, they've been consistent, but how long can a body be consistent?
I mean, look, injuries are a part of the game, right? But this team has shown that they've been able to fight through different lulls and different things like that throughout this season. If they are the best team that we think they are, it shouldn't matter. They're going to find a way. They're going to battle through. And you look, it's going to be a grind for any team if they make it to the Stanley Cup. It's going to be a grind. You got to figure it out.
Yeah.
And so if the Bruins are that team, they're going to do it.
That's so right. I mean, hockey playoffs, it is literally a grind. That is the whole challenge, basically, is can you survive that? But, you know, we've talked to Fludo Shinzawa from The Athletic a bunch of times in some of these sports roundups, and he's talked almost every time about the depth of this team. And with the trade deadline in the NHL tomorrow, I mean, it's the last chance to make any trades, adjust your roster. The Bruins have actually added a couple of pieces, including Tyler Bertuzzi today from Detroit. So they're actually just building on that depth, getting even deeper, which is kind of insane. And speaking of that, I just want to announce, because this has been hanging over the team basically all year, they finally signed David Pastrnak to an extension, 8-year, $90 million extension. He is arguably one of, if not the best player in the league, young star in your system. Locking this guy in for, you know, the foreseeable future is such a huge, huge development. Now they can really kind of focus on putting their heads down and making this playoff run.
All right, so Jonathan Marshall, we have just about 2 minutes left, and I want to bring one other thing in, because I'm watching spring training games for the Boston Red Sox over the weekend. It's in the bottom of the ninth. It is tied 6-6. The bases are loaded. The batter's at the plate from the Atlanta Braves, and this happens.
Now, time called. Conley took too much time. He's out. He didn't have his eyes on the pitcher by the 8-second pitch mark on the pitch clock. And that's going to be the ball game.
Conley was headed to first. He thought it was going to be a penalty for a ball four. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my goodness, Jonathan Marshall. And our last 90 seconds, of course, what's happening there is all these new rules in baseball trying to catch younger audiences by, frankly, making the game shorter and putting clocks on things. Do you think there will be a quick adjustment here? Are we going to see more of this, Jonathan?
I think that, look, it's going to be a tough adjustment, because when you're used to playing a game a certain way, you're used to watching a game a certain way, especially with these players, you can be a creature of habit, right? And so there may be a couple moments, especially early on in the season, but as the season goes on, they're going to have to adjust to it, it's spring training, so there aren't much stakes into it, right? But in the, you know, as the season goes on, the playoff race, it will behoove them to get adjusted quickly. So I think they'll figure it out.
And Chris Siderick, 30 seconds.
Tiziano, you remember when you and I talked about the pitchers complaining about the new, you know, cracking down on using substances and things like that? They will complain. You'll hear players complain. You may hear fans complain. But ultimately, it's good for the game. They need to stay relevant. They need to stay exciting. And I think these changes, as long as the league enforces it pretty strictly at first, they'll settle in.
All right, so Chris Siderick, you sit tight. Jonathan Marshall, we're going to say thanks to you here, WMUR sports reporter. Always great to have you on the Sports Roundup.
Thank you, guys. Always fun.
All right, now listen, Chris, you sit tight, but before we go, we're going to say goodbye. Chris is our senior producer here at Radio Boston. It's his last day. He is off to mold an entire new generation of journalists and soundmakers at Boston College. Chris, we wanted to play for you a little bit of our favorites from your time here on Radio Boston.
I need to paint the picture for our listeners. Chris came to work today in professional attire with his button-up shirt, but over it, you're wearing a Red Sox jersey.
You got to wear the colors, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
This is from the 1989 hit movie Major League. Eddie Harris is a pitcher talking about the measures to which he goes to basically make the ball move when he's pitching.
Of course, if the umps are watching me close, I just rub a little jalapeno inside my nose, get it running, and if I need to load the ball up a little, just wipe my nose.
So wait.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Thank you for elevating the discourse here.
Always here to bring the class. I consider that my role here on Radio Boston.
And then he does the rest on his own.
Just the crowd exploding. Hats come flying down out of the stands onto the ice. Big game one win. You could feel both kind of the crowd and the players. I felt like everybody just kind of wanted to say, hey, we all missed each other, and this was a real celebration of what this really can be.
You know, it may be stupid sports, right? It's a bunch of grown adults throwing a ball around a field and keeping track of points. Like, it doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things, but at the same time, it gives us such an opportunity to come together and to resume these cultural rituals we have and to feel connected.
The coolest interview that I was a part of this year was absolutely when we talked to Jessica Meir. She was an astronaut. She's from Maine.
You remember
this?
She
was part of the first all-female spacewalk. And we talked to her from here on Earth in Studio 3
while she was hundreds of miles above the planet.
I still remember the microphone floating around.
We arranged it through NASA, and I just have to play a little bit of how the interview started, because you could tell right away this was something special.
Station, this is Houston ACR. Please stand by for a voice check from WBUR.
You said kind of early on in the trail that, you know, that in this moment we're living, that someone will tell this story someday.
Yeah.
What do you think that's going to look like?
I don't know. And that's funny. We're, you know, they talk about a beginning, a middle, and an end of story. We're right in the middle. And who knows how the end goes?
We don't know how the end goes, Chris, but we love you. And we want to wish you Godspeed.
All right, you got me with that last one. It's been a blast. It's been quite a ride.
All right, so you can't see all the team in the control room, but many here to wish you well. Chris Sidorek, thanks for your time on Radio Boston.
I mean this with every ounce of my soul. Thanks for having me.
That's our show for today. I'm Tiziana Deering on behalf of the whole Radio Boston team. Thanks for listening. Tune in again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.